All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning and happy Monday, all you magnificent melonheads of the world. Today is June 15th, 2026. And right off the bat, we're right where we left off last week. The jawboning, the rhetoric, the peace could break out at any moment. We've got stocks are ripping and oil is plunging this morning as the rhetoric around an Iran peace deal gets louder and louder, even though the details remain very scarce. We still don't have any details. As a matter of fact, we have a lot of conflicting details, and yet the world is continuing to carry on as if this is a done deal. So what happened? It was announced yesterday that the MOU, again, this is a memorandum of understanding. It's not like this is a big peace treaty that's going to be ratified by senates and things like that. It's just like a couple of pages with the signature of two guys on it. But it was announced yesterday that an MOU would be signed on Friday, the 19th this week, in Geneva. Now, this would coincide with the G7 summit that's happening nearby. We were supposed to get a signing yesterday. That was going to be like the whole like Trump's birthday thing. It was going to be announced probably during the UFC fight. I don't know. They didn't get to that. But instead that they announced that there's going to be a thing on Friday. Even as this was going on, I mean, like midday yesterday, there was still explosions happening in southern Lebanon. The Israelis are still fighting with Hezbollah there. That has been one of the sticking points. You've got Iranian officials are circulating three different versions of this supposed MOU that say three different things. And then this morning, you've got U.S. Vice President J.D. Vance is in the press saying, yeah, we've got a deal. We're going to sign on Friday. But there are some sticking points. Those sticking points include the Strait of Hormuz and nuclear weapons, which are some pretty big freaking sticking points, are they not? Is that not like kind of the whole thing here, the Strait of Hormuz and the nuclear weapons thing, is it? I mean, other than that, things are going great. So, guys, once again, it's working. Stocks are up. Oil is down. I don't think we're necessarily any closer to a deal. I mean, at least not based on the details of it. They're just talking like they are closer, and maybe they're painting themselves into a corner verbally, and this makes them more willing to compromise. I just don't know. But both sides has planted their feet on certain issues and has not budged one inch, although they keep saying they are further and further in agreement. You guys are free to take that information and do what you want with it. All right, look, as all that is going on, we've also got a lot of AI news over the last couple of days. First of all, late last week, Anthropic shut down their Mythos 5 and Fable models after the U.S. government ordered them to restrict access to foreign nationals, both inside and outside the United States. Like basically, only U.S. citizens are allowed to use Mythos. And Mythos, remember, was that model that everybody was saying, it's too dangerous to release to the public. And then they released it to the public anyway. And then as soon as they do that, the government says, nope, we realize it's too dangerous to release to the public, and we order you to shut it down to any foreigners. And Anthropic says, well, we don't really know how to do that, especially when you consider how many H-1B visas work in tech within the United States. So they just shut it down to everybody to avoid non-compliance, if you will. This is all stemming from security concerns, national security concerns surrounding the jailbreaking of guardrails the company had put in place to stop it from doing things like go exploit a vulnerability on the CIA website or some shit like that. And apparently you can jailbreak it. You can just convince the model to disregard all those guardrails, which means they're not really guardrails. They're just suggestions. And so they just decided to shut down the model instead. So that's good. We got that going on. Now, back in October, we had KPMG, one of the big four accounting and consulting firms. KPMG released this report that was called Redefining Excellence in the Age of Agentic AI. And this report got a lot of headlines. It got a lot of attention. It was all about the benefits of AI and all of these use cases that these companies were rolling out, like government websites that were using them, train stations that were using them to set up schedules and map routes, and all these innovative things where AI was enhancing productivity and creating value for companies. But the problem, AI wrote the report and AI made up the examples of the use cases for AI. So just so we're getting our heads around the whole thing here, they had AI write a report about the use cases for AI, and AI made up, hallucinated the use cases for AI. And this article in Futurism is really good this morning because they actually inadvertently did argue for the single most compelling use of AI that's out there today, bullshitting your job, because apparently that's what KPMG did. And by the way, this is not the first time they have done this, had to backtrack a report because it was full of AI hallucinated citations. And by the way, this also is now, it's happened so much, they've come up with a term for it. Secondhand hallucinations are now so common they had to name it. And that is when an outfit like KPMG, which was once respected and valued for what they published, when they put out a report, other studies and other academic works cite that report as an example, and then they build their work on that, which means that hallucination is now being treated as accurate information in secondhand studies, which means it's propagating this bullshit. It's self-propagating. And it's now so common that they created a term for it, secondhand hallucination. By the way, if that is really a thing, if secondhand hallucination is a thing now and stupidity is prospering, how does that enhance productivity for anyone? That's right, it doesn't. It's actually a big net drain on productivity, as we've all learned through this exercise in token maxing over the last few months. Meanwhile, NVIDIA, which is like making more money than any company ever, for some reason is borrowing $20 billion. This news just broke a few minutes ago. They are issuing $20 billion of investment-grade bonds. What are they going to use that $20 billion for? Probably to buy their own product and report it as revenue. Hey, why not? It's worked for years. Might as well do it again. We got an article in the Wall Street Journal. It's pretty interesting this morning. SpaceX and OpenAI are ending Wall Street's era of stock scarcity. And this is an important question about liquidity. For the last 20 years or so, the amount of available stock in the world has shrunk, as trillions and trillions of dollars of shares have been bought back, and there just haven't been many IPOs, and a lot of companies were actually taken private. So there has been limited supply in the stock market, even though demand for stocks was obviously at all-time highs, which drove prices sharply higher. That is reversing now. You've got the SpaceX IPO, the OpenAI IPO, the Anthropic IPO, and you've also got big tech issuing tens of billions of dollars of shares, where just a few months ago, they were buying back tens of billions of dollars of shares. That is a big reversal in the supply-demand dynamics in the stock market, and it begs the question, who will buy the stock? They managed to find buyers for SpaceX last week. It's doing really well again this morning. Can they keep it up, though? That is the big question. We've also got Fox is buying Roku for $22 billion this morning. My gut tells me they're overpaying, but that's happening. And last but not least, private credit back in the news. This story broke late Friday. BlackRock's private credit fund is limiting withdrawals once again. The HPS corporate lending facility, BlackRock just bought HPS Partners a few years ago and then like immediately started gating redemptions. But the request for redemptions reached 13.3% in this most recent quarter. And that is up from 9.3% last quarter. And once again, they're only going to honor 5% of those requests, which means the stampede for the exits in private credit is getting bigger. More and more people want their money back, but they're not opening the doors any wider. Still just that trickle of 5% are getting their money back. The problems in private credit are not going away. They're just choking the flow out. And it kind of makes you wonder, if they were to just open the doors all the way, what kind of price discovery would that yield? Probably not too good for the whole sector. Guys, we got a lot to talk about this morning. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head? Let's see what's going on in the world of finance. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button so you can come and have your coffee with the melon heads tomorrow, because we do this every business day. Right now, the S&P 500 is higher by 95 points, 1.28% in the green. Stocks are having a good morning here, all on enthusiasms for a deal, no deal with Iran. You've got the Dow is up 554 points ahead of the open, 1.08% higher. But look at the NASDAQ, 2.14% in the green, 635 points to the upside ahead of the opening bell. all on Middle East hopium. The DXY is weaker by 27 basis points, 99.48. Again, you got a weaker dollar. You've got lower interest rates this morning. You got cheaper oil. That's sending stocks higher. That's sending the dollar lower. Looking over at the bond market, we've got yields are a little bit lower this morning. But to be honest with you, the move in the bond market seems somewhat muted considering the rip that's going on in stocks. The 30-year yield is down by 2 basis points, 4.953%. The 10-year is at 4.447. That's lower by 3.5 points. The 2-year yield is at 4.043, off by 4 points and change. And the 1-month is at 3.665, actually up by a fraction of a point this morning. All things considered, though, not a very big move in bonds here. Bitcoin is having a good morning here. $66,565. Bitcoin was up over the weekend. We bounced off of the low 60s. We even very briefly touched it at 59 and change a couple of weeks ago. Now Bitcoin is recovering again, and we've got Strategy and Michael Saylor are back in the news here. Saylor tweeted this out just this morning. Strategy has acquired 1,587 Bitcoin for $100 million to increase our Bitcoin reserve to 846,842. He's saying they also increased their U.S. dollar reserves here by $100 million to $1.1 billion. So what actually happened here? Strategy issued $200 million of new stock. They diluted their shareholders again, and they spent half the money to buy Bitcoin. The other half they're putting away for a rainy day, probably to pay for dividends on Stretch, which they're probably going to have to increase pretty soon here because Stretch is now selling at around $94, and they told people they would increase the dividend if that ever happened. But if you increase the dividend, then you have to sell more Bitcoin to pay those dividends to generate the cash that you need. Well, selling 32 Bitcoin was what caused that problem to begin with. In this case, they're issuing more Strategy stock to raise the money, and they're buying back a hell of a lot more Bitcoin than they sold 2 weeks ago. I mean, this is 1,587 Bitcoin, whereas they sold 32 a few weeks ago. But that's Saylor and his infinite money glitching this morning. Looking over at the commodities board, gold is ripping here, up by $131. At $4,350, higher by 3.09% this morning. Gold is reacting to those lower rates and that weaker dollar. And once again, it makes me a little nervous to see gold trading in tandem with risk assets. You got Bitcoin up, stocks up, and gold up. It's a little counterintuitive. It's being driven primarily by rates and the dollar, in my opinion. Silver is along for the road for the ride as well. $71.08 for spot silver. That's higher by $3 and change here, or 4.52%. I like the shiny. You got copper's up by 1%. Platinum is up by 5.8%. Palladium is up by 5.2%. The metals are all looking great this morning. And crude oil lower by 5.17%. July WTI futures are at $80.50. We even very briefly had a seven handle this morning, lower by $4.34. Let's take a look at the WTI chart here. These are daily candles since the start of the war over here. And that's a nice gap down this morning. Again, we're well below the 50-day moving average here. So let's talk about what's driving this morning. Here's a couple of articles about what's going on in Iran here. Iran pushes differing deal versions as U.S. sticks to timeline. Iran circulated competing versions of a proposed interim agreement with the U.S. even as President Trump stuck to his Sunday timeline to sign a deal, which obviously didn't happen now that it's Monday. All of the texts there were at least three, including similar elements around reopening the vital Strait of Hormuz waterway, giving Iran sanctions relief, and opening the door to longer-term negotiations around its nuclear program. But they diverge in key respects, making it harder to assess how much of a win the deal will be for either side. A major discrepancy hinged on how much financial relief Iran would get immediately or in the future, a concern for Iran hawks in the U.S. who don't want Trump to give away too much. So the Iran versions that are being circulated, of course, are full with all the typical talking points about a toll booth in the Strait of Hormuz and billions of dollars worth of locked funds. And some versions even say they're going to pay us reparations for damage done to the war. I would not hold your breath on any of those things. And then you've got President Vance just a few moments ago here, 8:30 a.m. Eastern time. Vance says a lot of Iran deal details to figure out, but US has all the cards. Yes, I've heard many times about this all the cards thing. I'm not sure we're playing Uno or Go Fish here, but Vice President J.D. Vance on Monday said after the U.S. and Iran struck a preliminary peace deal that there are a lot of details that remain to be ironed out, but he expressed confidence that America has all the cards in subsequent talks. The agreement reached Sunday would extend the U.S.-Iran ceasefire for 60 days and set up a framework for future negotiations about Tehran's nuclear program and other key issues. The text of the preliminary deal has not yet been released. Again, that's right. We're going to extend the ceasefire by 60 days. It's been one heck of a ceasefire. We've shot at each other almost every single day of that ceasefire. So we'll have 60 more days of that, apparently. Vance on CNBC's Squawk Box Monday morning said the deal's two major prongs are reopening the Strait of Hormuz and clinching a long-term commitment that Iran will never develop a nuclear weapon. Those are kind of big prongs, right? Isn't that, aren't those two very big issues? Like, isn't that the whole point of this deal is to get the oil flowing through the Strait again and to supposedly prevent Iran from getting a nuclear weapon, which they've been 5 minutes away for the last 20 years from doing? I don't really know what we achieved here. I really don't. We spent a lot of money. A lot of people died. I don't really get it, guys. You may notice my confusion here. I also don't see us any closer to any agreement here, to any kind of compromise. I see both sides saying the same thing they've been saying all along while saying we're even closer now than we've ever been. It's some version of what they've been saying on and off for months. But hey, they bought themselves 5 more days of lower oil prices by saying we're going to sign the deal on Friday. So we'll probably have the war flare up and then fizzle out again several times between now and Friday, I guess. All right, shifting gears back to the AI bubble. We've got Anthropic shuts down Mythos access after sweeping U.S. order. Now, as we go through this, also keep in the back of your mind that the U.S. government is also supposedly negotiating buying a stake in Anthropic. Behind the scenes, as all this is going on, that's kind of a twist in this whole story here. Anthropic has disabled access to its most advanced AI models, including Mythos, following an unprecedented order by the Trump administration to keep the technology out of the hands of all foreign nationals. U.S. government told Anthropic to suspend access to the Fable 5 and Mythos 5 models by any foreign national, whether inside or outside the U.S., citing national security concerns. The company said in a statement, a U.S. official confirmed the Commerce Department sent the letter. The model developer has since shut off access to both systems to all customers to ensure compliance. Never before has the U.S. government taken such sweeping measures to rein in foreign access to frontier AI models developed by an American company. Both the Trump and Biden administrations have limited access abroad to other consequential technologies, such as semiconductors and supercomputers, and some have debated the merits of blocking access to AI models, but restrictions on the software itself have raised constitutional and commercial concerns. Anthropic said it believes the U.S. government issued the order after discovering that it's possible to jailbreak or bypass the guardrails of Fable 5, a recently released version of Mythos that the company blocked from carrying out cybersecurity tasks. We disagree that the finding of a narrow potential jailbreak should be cause for recalling a commercial model deployed to hundreds of millions of people, Anthropic said in its website post, maybe inflating the user statistics a bit there. If this standard was applied across the industry, we believe it would essentially halt all new model deployments for all frontier model providers. Researchers at Amazon had conducted jailbreak research that revealed some vulnerabilities in Anthropic's model, according to a report in the Wall Street Journal. Amazon and the U.S. government were in contact about the vulnerability before the controls were imposed, according to people familiar with the matter, who were granted anonymity to discuss sensitive conversations. Amazon CEO Andy Jassy was involved in those exchanges, one of the people said. The information reported earlier that Jassy raised concerns to U.S. senior officials. An Amazon spokesperson said it's not uncommon for governments to consult with the company on security risks, but declined to share details of any such discussions. All right, so Mythos was supposedly so dangerous that they were not going to release it to the public. They released it anywhere. They said they put guardrails in there. The guardrails were weak. They were able to be bypassed. The government said, you need to cancel this thing for all foreign nationals, both inside and outside the U.S. Company says, we're not sure we can pull that off, so we're just going to shut it down for everyone. And as all this is going on, the government is supposedly negotiating a deal to buy a stake in this company. All right, a lot of moving parts there. Meanwhile, we got this one in Futurism, and this is hilarious. By the way, shout out to the Financial Times who initially broke this story. Consulting firms report on how awesome AI is, found to contain idiotic AI hallucinations. Well done, everyone. And they're calling this the insulting firm, not to be confused with the consulting firm. There's a lot of LOL in this Futurism article this morning. A new report that was supposed to be a shining panegyric to how useful AI was caught. Man, I can't even keep a straight face. Can somebody tell me what the heck is a panegyric? I don't have my thesaurus out in front of me. Let me start this over. A new report that was supposed to be a shining panegyric to how useful AI is was caught loaded with fake claims that appear to be AI hallucinations, Financial Times reports. A blunder that may have unintentionally demonstrated AI's most compelling use case, bullshitting your job. Titled Redefining Excellence in the Age of Agentic AI, the report was released in October by KPMG, one of the big four consulting firms, making the mishap an all the more embarrassing indictment of elite Wall Street professionals' mindless enthusiasm for the tech. If only someone had spent the last 3.5 years documenting that mindless enthusiasm for an unproven technology. It claimed that numerous big organizations are already making extraordinary use of the tech, with the takeaway that you should be deploying AI too, lest you become one of those dinosaurs that still relies on the fleshy circuitry of the brain to synthesize information. The global wealth manager UBS integrates AI agents across investment advisory, risk management, and compliance monitoring, it stated. The Swiss Federal Railways has AI agents that help users plan, book, and optimize journeys based on preferences, real-time conditions, and carbon impact, turning SBB into a holistic mobility orchestrator, it further asserted. And the Transport for London was using AI agents to predict and manage congestion, personalize commuter updates, and coordinate multimodal transport. AI evangelists, never above shameless boosterism and misleading claims, would desperately hope for any of these things to be true. But as the Financial Times was tipped off by AI detecting startup GPT-0, they're not. A UBS spokesperson told FT that the claims about AI agents were factually incorrect. A Swiss railway spokesperson echoed the claims made about its AI usage were not accurate. And a spokesperson for the London Transit System called the report's assertion misleading. The provenance of another false claim that the NHS Greater Manchester uses AI agents to do everything from the triage of patients to predict hospital readmissions is a classic game of AI telephone. It appeared to be based on a press release with footnotes citing a communique about an AI tool designed to combat lung cancer, which had nothing to do about an AI agent performing the above hospital tasks, according to the Financial Times. KPMG pulled the report from its websites after it was alerted about the bogus claims, but the damage is done. Its findings were already cited by industry publications and a major Czech newspaper, GPT-0, found. Once that information is out, even though it's been retracted, now that it's already been cited, basically the internet treats it as fact, even though it was fake. It was AI hallucinations about AI. For AI fabrications to be trickling down from a consultancy of KPMG stature poisons the well of information, GPT-0 CEO Edward Tian told FT, increasing the risk of secondhand hallucinations. And this reminds me of that article about Aidan Toner Rogers, the MIT graduate student who did the study that found some big lab was using AI to create new materials, and they had filed all these patents and new. Turns out it was all fake. It was all made up. And again, how many of the benefits of AI have been just completely fabricated on the spot by people trying to justify trillions of dollars of spend on this category that has yet yielded no tangible benefits for anyone anywhere beyond AI slop jamming up your scroll in your newsfeed? But that's not stopping NVIDIA from borrowing $20 billion. NVIDIA looks to raise at least $20 billion from bond offering, probably to buy their own chips. Oh, I may have editorialized a little bit there. NVIDIA is seeking to raise at least $20 billion from its first direct corporate bond sale since 2021, according to people with direct knowledge of the matter. The chip maker is marketing bonds in 7 tranches with maturity spanning 2 to 30 years, according to a person with knowledge of the matter. Price talk on the longest tenor is a spread of about 0.9 points above treasuries, one of the people said, asking not to be identified because they're not authorized to speak publicly. All right, so 0.9 points above treasuries for 30 years. So who wants to lock up their money for 30 years with NVIDIA for 5.9% interest? Yeah, no thanks. No deal, Jensen. The deal is extending a relentless wave of borrowing for companies spearheading the AI boom. Firms such as Alphabet and Amazon have been tapping every corner of the debt market to build the computing capacity needed for AI's rapid expansion. Having raised hundreds of billions of dollars since last year, investors have readily absorbed the supply. Proceeds from NVIDIA's sales will help fund general corporate purposes, including the repayment of refinancing of outstanding notes, the person said. Yeah, and also the purchase of their own freaking product using CoreWeave or some other NeoCloud as an intermediary. I'm sure none of that is going on with this borrowed $20 billion. Why does NVIDIA need to borrow all this money? Don't they have like $130 billion of free cash flow according to their most recent fiscal releases? Yeah, anyway, goes right along with this next one though, doesn't it? SpaceX and OpenAI are ending Wall Street's era of stock scarcity. Now, there's plenty of share issuance and there's plenty of debt issuance going on, all in the name of building out these data centers. The stock market is starting to expand again after years of shrinking and potentially at a scale not seen since the dot-com era, which ended really well. For the better part of two decades, a defining feature of the U.S. stock market has been scarcity. Year after year, shares disappeared from public hands, with buybacks by S&P 500 companies alone erasing nearly $12 trillion worth. Now investors are about to discover what happens when the supply suddenly comes rushing back. According to JP Morgan, IPOs, secondary offerings, and other shares are poised to add roughly $1.5 trillion of stock to the U.S. equity market over the next 2 years, even after accounting for buybacks. If realized, it would mark the strongest period of net equity issuance since at least the late 1990s. This newfound abundance may reverse one of the market's most enduring tailwinds and herald the start of a seismic shift across Wall Street that, after years of buying back stock to boost shareholder returns or staying private altogether, companies are now turning to equity markets to raise capital instead. In other words, everybody is selling. SpaceX, Elon Musk's rocket, satellite, and AI conglomerate last week completed the largest IPO in history and jumped 19% in its debut after selling $75 billion of equity. In coming months, OpenAI and Anthropic are set to debut with mega IPOs of their own. In the meantime, Alphabet, Meta, and Oracle are selling hundreds of billions of dollars worth of shares to help finance the enormous spending demands of the artificial intelligence boom. Taken together, they represent a market that is starting to expand again after years of shrinking and potentially at a scale not seen since the dot-com era. The ramifications for the world's most prominent capital market could be far-reaching. Individually, none of the coming deals looks impossible to absorb, but as a whole, though, they are reviving a question that had largely disappeared. Who exactly will buy all the stock? And that is a good question here, guys. Who's going to buy all the stock? We found buyers for SpaceX, all right? It ripped on the IPO. There was plenty of demand for that. Will Anthropic do as well? Probably not as well, but Anthropic will probably be okay. OpenAI is just hosed, in my opinion, if and when they IPO. Still a lot of doubt about whether they'll actually pull it off. But who will buy the stock now that the market is expanding again? All right, also going on this morning, Fox to buy streaming device maker Roku for $22 billion. This one just broke a few minutes ago. Fox Corp has reached an agreement to acquire Roku for roughly $22 billion, marking another chapter in media consolidation as the industry grapples with several changes and challenges. On Monday, Fox announced it would acquire Roku for $160 per share. Fox's stock was trading down about 13% in pre-market trading, while Roku was up about 2%. The combination will bring together Fox News and sports channels, as well as its free ad-supported streamer Tubi with Roku, the maker of streaming devices and also the home of the Roku channel, a service similar to Tubi. The proposed acquisition comes about 7 years after Fox's last major deal, when it shed its entertainment assets in a $71 billion deal with Disney. Since then, Fox's portfolio has primarily been made up of its TV channels, namely broadcast network Fox, which has been airing the FIFA World Cup series since last week, Fox News Channel, and the Fox News Channel on cable. So Roku's doing all right this morning, $144.75. Again, the deal price was supposedly $160 for shares of Roku. Now, I haven't looked at Fox's ticker here. Let's see what Fox is doing. Ouch. Down 14.37%, $50.30 for shares of Fox, lower by $8.60 on that merger. All right, last one of the morning. BlackRock Private Credit Fund faces 13% redemption requests. Guys, the redemption requests are getting bigger, and they're not getting their money back. The problems in private credit, the headlines went away for about 3 months, but the problems are still there, and they're still getting worse. Shareholders asked to redeem more than last quarter, though withdrawals to be capped at 5% again. Investors in BlackRock's flagship private credit fund asked to redeem a collective 13.3% of the fund shares in the second quarter, an increase from 9.3% in the previous period. BlackRock will repurchase 5% of shares, it said in a letter on Friday, sticking with previously stated thresholds and cashing out shareholders on a prorated basis. I know, Midnight, I saw this one coming. I get it, and I'm telling them, but you got to give me a second, buddy, because we're still doing our recording here. Midnight has a lot to say about this particular story. BlackRock will repurchase 5% of its shares, it said in a letter on Friday, sticking with the previously stated threshold and cashing out shareholders on a prorated basis. The higher requests are the latest evidence that the once booming private credit industry is still under investor pressure following concerns about loan losses, fraud, and exposure to software companies that are looking vulnerable to artificial intelligence. Remember, guys, Carioc Capital, that was the company that was involved in telecom fraud. Big private credit loan, like $400 million, HPS Partners. This fund was what took the hit with that one. Earlier this month, Blackstone said investors in its fund known as BCRED asked to redeem 10% of their shares in the second quarter, and Cliffwater said its investors requested to redeem 17%. All right, note they're talking about Blackstone and BCRED there, not BlackRock and HPS Partners, so that's another one. But all three of these firms, Blackstone, BlackRock, and Cliffwater, all of them, the requests for redemptions are bigger than they were last quarter. Most of the funds are designed to allow managers to limit withdrawals to 5% of the fund, meaning investors are stuck for a period. Private credit managers say redemption gates are in place so that funds aren't forced into fire sales to cash out investors. BlackRock first capped redemptions on its flagship fund, which makes high interest loans directly to companies and has returned an annualized 10.2% since inception earlier this year. And I love how they're always so quick to talk about that. They're like, oh yeah, our fund has returned 10% every year. Well, how did they return that 10%? Did their investors actually get the money? No. They just arbitrarily increased the value of the holdings in the fund, in an illiquid fund, holdings where there is no market to go verify whether those marks are accurate. And then when people say we want our money back, they say, no, you can't have it. Because if we have to go sell this stuff at the price we just told you it's worth, that value is going to fall very quickly because they're illiquid investments, which means it's not really worth what they're telling us it's worth. But every time these private credit bozos are on TV, they love to talk about their 10% since inception yields. If it's really such a great investment, give people their money back, which they're not going to do because it was never really that great of an investment. Well, I just want to say thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melonheads this morning. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for the YouTube algorithm. Thank you very much to my magnanimous Melonheads on YouTube, Patreon, and Buy Me a Coffee for supporting the channel. Links are down below should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.